And understanding is all part of this radio program. Tell me your story. I'm Richard Dugan. This is a program that comes your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. And it's also streamed live on the internet at richarddugan.com. And then we archive the programs and we make them available to you and anyone else who wants to listen to the broadcast at richarddugan.com. That's Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, Dugan, D-U-G-A-N.com. You can also find out who our next guest coming up in coming weeks will be by going to the schedules page. You can also find other programs that we have recorded at the radio show's program page. We thank you so much for joining us, and we hope that you will join us for every single broadcast as we come your way with new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Today's program is a very interesting program because it takes me into a book that I read many years ago, written by, I believe the name was Robert Monroe, and Journey Beyond the Body, I think, was the original title. We're going to be talking with the executive director of the Monroe Institute, and we're going to be talking about not only out-of-body experiences, but we're talking about awakening through higher consciousness. We're going to be talking about these different things that the Institute is involved in, and we have with us the executive director of the Monroe Institute, Paul Rademacher. And you know, it's taken us a year to get here or more. I remember last August 2008 we talked, and you were coming through the area, and we're going to try to get together, and things just didn't happen, but we've sort of stayed in contact, and it's great to have you on the program.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Richard, and thanks for having me with you.
Did I get the title of the book right? Beyond the Body? Or Journey Beyond?
Journeys Out of the Body was the first book, and then he wrote two other ones. Far Journeys was his second book, and the third book was called Ultimate Journey.
Now, many people don't know who Robert Monroe was. Can you give us a little synopsis, and then where the Institute came from?
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. Robert Monroe, his story kind of begins many years ago. He was involved in radio as a career from a very early age. He got to be a pretty proficient in what he was doing in producing and writing various radio shows. I think at one point he was actually producing as many as 18 radio shows in a week. He was amazing in terms of his abilities and the work that he was able to put together. He got very interested in sound because of that, as you can imagine, and at one point in his career, this was back in the mid-1950s, 56, 57, and he was curious to see if people could learn while they were sleeping. And this was sort of a new phase in his career. He had, as I said, been very successful in radio, actually became a vice president of the Mutual Broadcasting System, and had produced one of his most famous shows that he was a part of was the show called The Shadow.
Oh, yes.
And yes, a lot of people remember that show and its tagline. So when he started looking around, there was this new advent of television that was coming on the scene, and he didn't know if he really wanted to go into that. So he thought, well, maybe sleep learning could be something we could explore. Because he was such an expert in sound, he thought, well, maybe we could use sound to help people get to sleep, because that was one of the major problems. How do you get people to sleep so that to test whether or not they can learn? They didn't want to use drugs to do that, and so he developed a series of sound patterns that gradually helped people to move into a state of relaxation and then eventually to sleep. Well, he was one of his own test subjects for his sound patterns, and I don't know whether it was because of listening to his own sound patterns or other reasons, but one evening he went to bed and fell asleep, and the next thing he knew, he was lying on this flat, hard surface, which was really strange because the last thing he knew, he was lying in bed with his wife. And what was even more bizarre, coming out of this floor that he was lying on was something that looked strangely like a fountain, but it wasn't really moving. And he was really disoriented, and had finally got himself straightened around, and he realized that he was upside down, and what was actually happening was that he was bouncing against the ceiling in his bedroom, and this fountain, or what looked like a fountain coming out of the floor, was actually the chandelier that was hanging from the ceiling. And from that vantage point, he looked down, and he saw his wife in bed, and he saw this other man in bed with his wife, and floated down closer and suddenly realized it was himself, and he got frantic and swam his way back into his body, sat up, his heart was pounding, he was breathing heavy, and he was utterly convinced that he was dying. But
wow.
Over time, those experiences, those out-of-body experiences, kept happening. And it was a terribly upsetting thing to his life because it wasn't part of the cultural conversation. There was nobody was really talking out loud about out-of-body experiences. And so he had to find his own way through this really strange stage of consciousness. And, after he got over the fear of dying, gradually this curiosity started to be unleashed, and he started to wonder if he could use the sound patterns he was working with to help to control those out-of-body experiences and perhaps even begin to help other people to experience them as well. And so that was the beginning of his research phase, and that was also became the basis to some extent of the work of the Monroe Institute. But what he found over time was that this out-of-body experience was just one small slice of a very large pie of human perception or human consciousness of which we are capable. And so the work of the Institute is to help people to explore on a more individualized and safe basis the nature of this amazing world of human consciousness and all of its wonder and its splendor.
Well, Paul, I'm intrigued by this. We've had a number of guests on over the last couple of years talking about out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences. We'll get the Institute's perspective on those kinds of things as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host and the executive director of the Monroe Institute. Again, it's Paul Rademacher.
You got it.
All right. Paul Rademacher is our guest, and I've got the pronunciation down, and we will return in just a moment here on the program. Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Can't go on falling back, a flooding river. Keep on
Paradigms for a New World. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm your host, Richard Dugan, with Paul Rademacher, and we're talking about, Paul and I are talking about the Monroe Institute, as well as Robert Monroe's work. This is fascinating for both me and for many of our listeners, Paul, because we're all curious about what's on the other side. And we'll talk a little bit about that as far as what Robert found and what the Institute has been researching. I have had the pleasure of interviewing a couple of people, one gentleman individual who actually has learned over the 20 years he's been doing this to induce out-of-body experiences. What I found so fascinating, and one of the reasons we had him on the program, was because his belief system seemed contrary to his experiences. But that didn't bother him in the least. As a matter of fact, he was actually able to marry the two. He didn't see that there was a conflict to him, obviously, because he continued to do this over the space of 20 plus years. He continues to do so. And that's, I found that fascinating, that he was actually able to break through the old paradigms that particular belief system had and allowed him to have these experiences that he finds very profound. And he's even teaching others how to do this as well. One of the areas you talked about that Dr. Monroe was involved in, and by the way, was he a doctor?
No, he was
all right,
not.
My mistake. That Robert was involved in having to do with sound. One of the areas we want to get into as well somewhere down the road is in other programs and dealing with sound therapy and the effects of different sounds on the human body. Can you give us more insight into that aspect of the Monroe Institute in terms of the types of sounds that are used, what you found? Because we've heard the stories, more. It's not myth or legend, it's scientific fact, about what the effects that classical music has on the human brain and the abilities to study and or sleep and relax and so forth?
Mm-hmm. Well, the approach that Robert Monroe went for was to see if the brain could sort of, he called it a frequency following response, where if you induce a certain frequency, the brain would tend to mimic it. We have a bit of a different perspective on that now, but his word for it was a frequency-following response, so that if you introduce a tone that had a certain frequency, then the brain would tend to want to mimic that. The problem that you run into, though, is that the frequency ranges that we're trying to induce are actually below the threshold of hearing. So if you want to get into, say, theta states and delta states, those frequencies are too slow or too low to actually hear. So in order to get around that issue, what he did was to apply something that was known as a binaural beat to help people to help the brain to mimic that. And but what a binaural beat is two tones, one in one ear and a set of headphones. You put one frequency in one ear, and then the other ear, just a little bit different frequency. Those two tones are in an audible range, but when they come together, because they're just a little bit off, there's a sort of a wavering or a vibrato that gets created actually in the brain itself. That vibrato is technically below the threshold of hearing, yet because it's manufactured into the brain tends to mimic that as well. So what we have some complex signals that will help people to move gradually and progressively into deeper and deeper states of relaxation so that they can continue to be awake and aware in ranges of consciousness in which they might ordinarily fall asleep or move into unconsciousness. Because what usually happens to us as we get more and more relaxed, when we're going to bed at night, as our body progressively relaxes, we reach this threshold where we cross over into this other awareness, and we forget that we have a body that's lying in a bed, and we forget that we have a wife and children in this world. We go off into this dream world, or we have lucid dreams or other kinds of experiences that are disconnected from this waking reality. But with what we do, we help people to get progressively relaxed and then actually start to cross over that threshold so that they can carry some of their normal waking consciousness into the realms that are normally reserved for these deeper states of meditation or for sleep or for dreaming, that kind of thing. And so that opens up whole new worlds of perception that can be truly life-changing for people.
Now, this sounds like a very strange question, but the first thing I need to know is, who are we really? I mean, the physical body, as we've talked on this program, is nothing more than a vehicle, and that there's an essence within us. And some say that our bodies sleep for the purposes of allowing the body to rest, to recharge and rejuvenate, and that's for the physical body. But who and what we really are, no one really has a real handle on not only who and what, but where we reside in the physical body. So my question to you in regards to sleep and taking consciousness, that waking consciousness into the sleep mode, where are we going?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I think it's the focus of so much of our work. One of the things that I think kind of unique about the Institute is that we don't really we don't have any dogma per se. We don't have any gurus who are going to tell you what you should think or what you should believe. We try very intentionally to keep a very open-ended perspective on that. And if there's any piece of dogma that we ask people to entertain, it is the possibility that they might be more than their physical body. And we don't try to tell them what that more is. We prefer to let them find out by their own experience. And as they do that in a progressively deeper manner, then we allow them to put that in the language that they are familiar with. And that could be a religious language, it could be a psychological language, it could be, a cultural language. That's up to them. Our purpose is to create the context for their own exploration. So And as you can imagine, one of the questions then that starts to come up in all of that, and you alluded to it so well, is that if you begin to experience, not philosophize about, not theologize about it or speculate about it, but when you have the experience of being more than your physical body, then you automatically move into the question that you asked, and it's the perennial question, which is, who are we? How big are we? Where do I begin? Where do I end? What are the limits of my perception? What are the limits of my sense of individuality? And these are all very, very deep questions, and I think that you might find some similarities among people, but I think you're also going to find a lot of variation in the answers to that question, depending on the experience that people bring into their exploration of these realms.
I mean, it's like when you and I would talk, I'm here in Santa Barbara, California. You're there on the West Coast and on the East Coast. And
last time I checked.
I'm sorry?
I said last time I checked.
Last time. and so we're conversing and I know where I am and you know where you are. And if you want to get something to drink during the commercial break, you get up out of your chair and you walk across the room and you go into the kitchen. But when you have an out-of-body experience, you know, and certainly the descriptions, as you related Robert Munro's, you know, of bouncing off of the ceiling and the chandelier and so forth and looking down and seeing what he saw, you would assume, oh, well, he's in the room. You know, he's floating in the room out of his body. So that essence, which is him, is what's floating outside the body. And yet the body continues to function.
Yes.
And so, and yet I guess we've known that for years because we have these machines in hospitals that will keep the physical body going long after the essence, I don't know what you call it, the soul or what, the spark, long after that has left, or as far as we know it's left. I mean, is there a way to measure that, the existence and or whether it's still in the physical body?
Yeah, it's a very, very complex question, but you know, we don't have to be quite so mysterious about it. When you think about the fact that every night when we go to sleep, we have an out-of-body experience, and we just take that as a matter of course. It's not a big deal. But even in our waking world, I think what's more rare than an out-of-body experience is an actual in-body experience, because most of the time, our attention is taken off into many other directions. We're either thinking about the past, regretting it, or reliving it, or we're worried about the future, or we're anticipating it. I mean, a fine example of this happened to me not so long ago. I was traveling in an airplane. I was supposed to land in New York City, and the stewardess came on and mentioned something, but I didn't really notice it because I was reading this great book, and it was called Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, which is the story of the Wizard of Oz told from the Wicked Witch's perspective. It's a great, great book.
Hmm.
I was absolutely engrossed in this thing, and she said we'd be landing soon, and so I got back to my book, and I'm reading, and suddenly I look up and I think, you know, we've been flying a long time. We should have landed by now, and the city had disappeared from underneath us, and we're out in the middle of nowhere over this rural area, and I think, well, what's going on? But I go back to my book, I read some more. And next thing I know, we're coming in for this landing, and it seems like the pilot's really leaning on the brakes really hard, and everybody starts to cheer in the airplane. I said, what's going on? And the stewardess comes on, and she says, welcome to Oz. And I thought, well, this is really bizarre. All right? So I turned to somebody, and I said, where are we? And he said, well, we've landed at LaGuardia. And I said, well, we were supposed to land at JFK. He said, didn't you hear? They couldn't get the flaps down on the plane, and they had to land at a longer airport. And didn't you see all the fire trucks there lined up as we were passing by? And I said, no, I didn't at all. That's just an example.
Wow.
Of how we can be out of body in our daily life. The real trick, I think, for many of us is to go in body and to be clearly present to where we are at any given point in life. So I don't think it's at all mysterious that we go out of body.
That's I love the story. Especially, welcome to Oz. And your name is Dorothy now.
That's
I do have to say that, and I know others have had this experience, so I don't think that anybody who knows me needs to be concerned about my well-being, but we've all had the experience of driving, and we are conscious of where we started from, and then the next thing we know, we're at our destination, but we have no clue as to how we got there. And yet we were driving a car on the roadway with others, maybe even on the freeway as far as we know. And I've even had the experience of being conscious but totally being unclear as to where I am. I've driven the road hundreds of times, and all of a sudden I'm looking around going, where am I? None of this looks familiar.
That's right, because you've been up in your head somewhere. And you haven't been, you know, present in the car driving, and so really it's a question of focus. What are we focused on at any given time? Are we focused in body, or are we focused in our mind? Are we focused in the past? Are we focused in the future? Are we focused in sleep? And you know, another analogy I think that can help people with this to some extent that is not very mysterious at all is if you think about a radio station. You can tune in to any kind of different setting that you want. In one radio station, you might be listening to country music, and that's a reality in and of itself. Another station might be pop music. Another station might be Richard Dugan, which is the best of all of them, of course. And each one of those is a separate reality. It's just a question of where you want to tune the dial.
Yeah.
So we help people to tune the dial to expand the range of that they're able to perceive.
Well, we encourage people certainly to listen to this program as well as the archives, but we also encourage them to go to the websites of our guests. And in the case of your website or the Monroe Institute website, we encourage people to go there. The Monroe Institute, Awakening Through the Experience of Consciousness. We're going to talk a little bit about that phrase as well, because you have some key phrases, words in that line at the Monroe Institute that to me are so fascinating to take a look at. I'm always interested in having people define terms, and we'll do that here as we continue. I'm Richard Dugan, and the executive director of the Monroe Institute. Paul Rademacher is my guest, and we're talking about the out-of-body experience and how the Monroe Institute has been researching and studying that. I'm very curious as to learn more about how I can have these experiences. And who knows, maybe I and others who are listening, Paul, we've been having them, but we're just not remembering them. And so maybe there's a technique or something that we can do to maybe remember those experiences and maybe even induce them in appropriate settings. I have a feeling it's not a good idea to have an out-of-body experience while driving a vehicle or operating machinery or things of this nature. Although maybe that's an area we should talk about. Does the brain and its memories and the cognitive functioning take over to keep us safe while we're having these experiences? Because, and not just from that element, but I'm sure you've dealt with this as well. People who have certain belief systems believe that by having these kinds of experiences, we are opening ourselves up to negative influences. And I'll just use that term. So let's deal with that. But again, a reminder that you can go to the Monroe Institute and their website. And that's, I believe it's themonroeinstitute.org.
It's Monroe Institute.
Just, all right. Monroe, that's MonroeInstitute.org, Awakening Through the Experience of Consciousness. I'm going to go ahead and go back to the first thing I want to deal with, and that is the slogan, if you will, or the phrase that is here, Awakening Through the Experience of Consciousness. And the experience that we have versus subconsciousness or unconsciousness, those are the words that kind of come up. What do you mean by awakening through the experience of consciousness?
Well, I think in a lot of respects, we have been taught to narrow our range of awareness from the time that we're kids. You know, when we come into this world, we have a real openness to not only this world, but I think to the non-physical world as well. Very often you'll hear of kids who will have imaginary friends, for instance, or they might see fairies, or they might sense maybe a person who's deceased and that kind of thing. And of course, if they mention that to their parents, the parents say, "Oh, that's just your imagination. You gotta, you know, that's not real. That's not really happening."
And that's only if you're lucky they say that to you.
That's right. That's right. They could say many other things as well, and it, you know, or that could be of the devil or something like that. So we sort of have a cultural bias against anything that we can't perceive with our five physical senses, with the waking mind. And but in actuality, I think we've been created to have a much broader range of perception than we allow ourselves to have as adults. And that's why when people come to the Institute, or when somebody enters into a process of meditation or chanting, there are many different ways into this world. Whenever somebody starts to focus on that inner world, it can be quite a revelation when it's held in the backdrop of our Western culture. Not so much in the Eastern cultures, because they take it pretty much for granted as a normal course of what it means to be human. But in our culture, it can be quite a revelatory thing. And in that sense, I think it's an awakening. But it's an awakening not in intellectual knowledge that is gained, but awakening because of a personal experience. And when you have that kind of personal experience, it changes dramatically your relationship to that knowledge. It's a different order of knowing altogether that is quite a bit more compelling than intellectual knowledge.
Hmm. Let's talk a little bit about this experience, this out-of-body experience. Now, if someone were to, say, Google out-of-body experience, would they be able to find the Monroe Institute in that fashion, or vice versa? If they Googled Monroe Institute, would that be the main subject that would come up?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because this is a bit of a bugaboo that we face, because Robert Monroe's books were primarily about out-of-body experience. But as I mentioned before, the out-of-body experience is just one very small slice of a very large pie. And we're interested in the pie rather than the slice. And so we might have maybe 15% of people who will come to the Institute who might have an out-of-body experience while they are there. But for the rest of them, what often will happen is they will find some other slice of that pie that is equally as compelling, in fact, maybe even more compelling, so that the desire for the out-of-body experience falls away. I know that was kind of what happened to me when I first went to the Institute. It was a world that opened up that was so breathtaking, so wondrous, but I would never have classified it as a classic out-of-body experience. For me, it had a different quality than that, but I didn't feel like I lost anything because I didn't have an out-of-body experience, even though that was secretly what I had come to the Institute for.
So have you had an out-of-body experience since working there at all?
I have had glimpses of them, brief interludes of them. My experiences tend to be more what I would call a sense of bilocation, in that I will be aware that I have a body that is still lying on a bed back somewhere, and at the same time I will be aware that I'm deeply involved in a very vivid experience that is completely compelling and enthralling. So everybody who comes has a little bit of a different nuance as to how they're going to engage this world. And part of our task is to help people to open up to the varieties of potential that can be laid before them. One of the biggest difficulties we can get into is if somebody comes and they are solely focused on an out-of-body experience, they will miss a lot of the other options that are equally compelling and wondrous. And so if we can get people to open up, they'll usually have a tremendous experience.
There's a wonderful book I read. It was actually the beginnings of my searching, if you will, and musing into spirituality and all of these higher consciousness concepts, Autobiography of a Yogi. And in that book, there was an experience that Paramahansa had where his guru hit him firmly on the chest, and he had this experience of omnipresence. He could see in all 360 degrees at once, and his awareness was just opened up phenomenally. I mean, it's like trying to explain infinity, you know, but that was the way they explained it in the book. And even the term bilocation was referred to in the book as well, as you have alluded to. And I've often thought, what a wonderful way to travel. You don't worry about frequent flyer miles because you can be in two places at one time, accomplishing essentially two different things. And of course, then the question arises by some, okay, well, but am I really in reality A in both places, or am I in reality A in body A and reality B in the bilocated body, and that type of thing? What have you been able to ascertain in that regard?
Well, I think that there are a variety of realities that we have access to. And in, though we may not realize it, we really are multidimensional beings. And we've been trained to put our focus solely in this three-dimensional space-time reality that we all have a consensus around what the nature of that is. But in fact, if we let go of our death grip on that particular reality, I think that other dimensions can begin to open up for us in pretty magical ways. So but I don't think it's necessarily all that mystical. You know, we live even in our daily life. You know, as I said before, we live in a multitude of realities, and we just skip back and forth and between them almost minute by minute, but seldom do we recognize that we do. I think part of the task is to become conscious of those shifts in perception and learn to work with them in a way that's a bit more productive rather than being quite so haphazard as our usual experience.
So help us to understand, I think you've probably alluded to it earlier in the interview, but how does having an out-of-body experience, I feel like I'm keep going back there, and that's only a slice of the pie of the Monroe Institute.
All right.
How does, say, learning how to do that help me in my day-to-day life in this reality? What are the benefits?
There seem to be many benefits that happen, and so many people think that if you're going to pursue this kind of work, that maybe you're doing it as an escape from this painful world, and you become less productive in this world, and what's the saying, so spiritual that there are no earthly good?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's just the opposite happens, because what transpires many times is that when people start to get a broader range of the perceptions that they're capable of, and also a larger perspective on the context of their life and the context of their being, what often happens is that they get into a deeper contact with their true passion and calling in life. And so rather than retreating from life, what usually happens is that people dive more energetically into their life because for the first time they may be in correspondence between their head and their heart, so that this world then becomes a place of intense creativity as opposed to be a world that our primary activity is to avoid pain and to take care of the body and to avoid death and to be focused on survival. You start to move into a richer kind of experience. And what also happens correspondingly is that as we move away from the numbness that we surround ourselves because of the pain of life and begin to open up to the world itself starts to open up to us as well. And so we start to have experiences of synchronicity. We start to see the spiritual underpinnings of the physical world around us. We start to open up to love in new ways. And So there are tremendous advantages that can happen to this, and quite often very different from what people would think from the outside.
Paul Rademacher is my guest. He's the executive director of the Monroe Institute, and it's monroeinstitute.org. That's monroeinstitute.org. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking about a wide variety of different things. Now, Paul, you're the one that gave me the analogy, so I'm going to ask you about the other slices of the pie. Tell us, if you can, we've got quite a few minutes left here in the broadcast, and I'm very curious as to some of the other things that the Institute is doing, some of the other research and study, and can people go to your website to get involved in these other slices of the pie?
Yes. I mean, we have various CDs that people can buy and try out at home. They are somewhat effective, but what we find is that when people actually come to a program, it tends to be much more effective because it isn't just listening to a CD that is important. It's actually moving away from your everyday life and moving into a time of focus on the inner world and letting go of all of the concerns that happen in our jobs and our families and our relationships. And really giving yourself the time and the space to explore, and to explore in a place, in a context of safety is extremely important, as we found out. But also there's a group energy that starts to develop, and that group energy is also supported by all of the other groups that have come through that have kind of created an energetic field. All of these things start to work together to help people to move through at a much faster pace and a much more profound pace. The problem that happens that when you try to do this at home on your own is that you can listen to one exercise and then you're thrown right back into your normal world and your baseline doesn't shift. But when you can give yourself a 6-day period where this is the focus of what you're doing, then the baseline of your life really does shift pretty dramatically.
So tell me, if I'm going to go out to the East Coast to the Monroe Institute, and I already have experienced, let's say, the out-of-body kind of things. What are some of the other things that I can get involved in?
Well, one of the things I've already kind of mentioned is that it's a great time for people to explore what their purpose is in life. And so they can get in touch with a deep guidance that comes from the other side. That can be one of the effects. Another effect, and this isn't something that we necessarily even try to do, it seems to happen almost by accident, is that if someone's lost a loved one, sometimes they can come in contact with that loved one. Not all the time, and sometimes the more the person wants it, the more elusive that becomes. But it's surprising how many people will contact somebody who's passed over and making that contact can reduce some of the grief that people can feel. Another thing that happens is that people get in touch maybe with aspects of themselves that have been split off. You know, we all deal with trauma in different ways. And very often what we'll do is, if something has been tremendously injurious to our life, is we will assign that pain to an aspect of our personality, and then we'll kind of split it off into the netherworld. But what happens at the Institute is we open up to this wider range of being human. We can start to gather some of these split-off parts, and so that we move more toward a much broader wholeness that can happen in our lives. It, again, can be very very healing in a very profound sense. These are just a few of the things that can happen. We can encounter other people within the group in settings that are, you might think, would be out of body. Many different experiences in that way.
It sounds, in one, it sounds like a lot of fun in a way, because it's out of the ordinary. It's not like I'm going to go to a workshop on welding or business management or something of this nature. And to work on the interior of oneself, it's vast. We're not talking about a tiny little space somewhere, you know. Like, and I'll be honest with you, like like the ocean, which is vast, but we don't know how vast our interior life is, our interior world is.
That's absolutely true. And I liked what you said before, is that fun is a really big component in this whole exploration. You find that the first night when people come together, our groups are usually about 24 people or less. And the first night, everybody's kind of looking around and wondering who these other people are, and my God, what am I doing here? What have I gotten myself into? And it seems within, 12 hours or so, there's a bond that starts to develop in the group. People start laughing, and they start touching joy, maybe that they haven't had in years. And we notice a physical difference that happens in people as they go through that week. When they come in, they're exhausted, and their faces are crinkled up from the stress and strain of daily life. And as they go through the week, it seems as if they let go of that stress more and more and more, to the point where some people can look even 10 or sometimes even 20 years younger than the day when they arrived. And that exterior view is sort of reflected on the interior as well, as people get in touch with a joy maybe that they've forgotten that they could even experience. So you're right, that's a very important component of what we do.
Well, I know that one of the reasons why we're here right now is because I had the opportunity, the actually good fortune of participating in a very fun event today, building sandcastles at the beach. Never done it before. It was extraordinary. I mean, the experience and the ability to just play. I have an idea of what I wanted to build. But we did so much more than that, and we had a lot of fun, and there was a certain level of structure, but it wasn't, hard and rigid, and we just had fun, and that was the whole point of the afternoon in the Sandcastle Festival that we participated in. And that's in this world.
Yeah, play is so important because it touches that childlike energy, and it's the child that remembers that we are capable of so much more than what the narrow confines that we assign ourselves to in adulthood. So yeah, you're exactly right. Boy, it's a powerful thing when you touch that child.
If people want to come to the Institute, what's the protocol, and how do you sign up, or do you get selected? Do you have to go through a screening process? What happens in this situation? I want to come to the Institute. I also have a job, blah, blah, blah. What do I do, Paul?
Well, you go to our website or you give us a call, and our phone number is 434-361-1500. Again, that's 434-361-1500. And you can talk to anybody on staff there, and they'd be glad to answer as many questions as you have and lead you through the process. We have an application that you fill out, and then you just send in your money, and we'll get you scheduled, as long as we've got room in any particular class. And our schedule is on the website, so you can see when you might have some free time, and just slot us in there.
Awakening through the experience of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Very cool. And you're going somewhere that you've never been before, most likely. And you're going to have an extraordinary time, and it's yours. I've often used the comment with people, about how there's somebody that that you're with 24/7, and you hardly ever listen to that person. But there are individuals that come into your life, and I use this, it's just a rough guesstimate that you see this other person 5 minutes once a week, and you give that person more credence than you do the one that you're with 24/7. Most people figure out the one you're with 24/7 is you.
That's right.
And so you start giving yourself more credence and what you have to offer yourself and others. It goes a long way. What doesn't go a long way is this program. We have to take another break. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're going to be coming back to wrap up the program. Hope that you go to richarddugan.com. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
If we leave to that road, see how far. ocean road, all the countries in our bones, all the trouble that you know, empties out.
Tell me your story. New paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And I'm wondering, Paul Rademacher, who is my guest, the executive director of the Monroe Institute, is that kind of where you guys are coming from too? And that you're giving people a way to sort of work through a lot of the stuff they've gathered over the years, get in contact with the true self, and go off and have fun living the purpose that you came here to live?
That seems to be what happens. Again, it isn't something that we do consciously, because we've learned over the years that everybody who comes from for a different purpose, and generally they come at the right time in their lives. And when they arrive, they don't necessarily arrive by themselves. They are coming with an extraordinary amount of guidance, even though they may not be perceiving it at that time. And we have learned down through the years that we can trust that guidance completely. We don't have to, as I said before, we don't have to have the answers for people. We know that the guidance that they bring into the context that we're setting up will take them exactly where they need to go and exactly to the place that they're prepared to go. And so it's quite a wonderful thing, knowing that we don't have to be gurus ourselves.
Right.
In fact, what we're trying to do is to help people to understand that they are their own gurus. And it's a terribly empowering thing when somebody can touch that in their lives, to know that they have what they need. They don't have to look to us for it. And so it's kind of like, you know, teaching someone to fish, as opposed to giving them a fish.
Right.
We take that very seriously, and yet with a lot of joy when we do so.
Before we wrap up the program, we have a couple minutes left, and my final question to you that I like to ask most all of my guests: you could be doing a lot of different things, and of course you've been doing this for quite a long time as well at the Monroe Institute. I could be doing a lot of different things. My question to you, though, is with the Monroe Institute and you being the executive director thereof, why this? Why now?
Or me personally?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I had much of a choice in the matter. I know I don't have time to tell you my life story, but very quickly, I had a mystical experience when I was in my early 30s,
mm-hmm.
that took me into seminary at Princeton Theological Seminary. I graduated 3 years later and became a Presbyterian pastor for 15 years. But it was that mystical experience that was the driving force of my life from that point on. And I couldn't quite touch that world the way I wanted to in the ministry. And so when I started coming into the Monroe Institute, that world opened up for me all over again in Technicolor. And I was hooked from that point on, and eventually became a residential trainer there, mm-hmm. and then became executive director.
Well, it's exciting work, I'm sure. I would love to have an opportunity to sit down with you the next time you're out here on the West Coast and do a face-to-face interview, because, like you said, with people who come there rather than using the CDs, which are a wonderful thing, there's a whole different energy, a whole different genre that's set up, if you will, when you have people there in the same space. And I'm thankful that at least we had an opportunity to speak to you via phone, and thank you so much for joining us on the broadcast.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much, Richard.
And I want to thank you for listening. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices, like the Monroe Institute at monroeinstitute.org. That's monroeinstitute.org. And again, our thanks to Paul Rademacher, the executive director of the Monroe Institute. And we look forward to having you back on the program again in the near future, Paul.
Be my pleasure.
Until next Saturday, I encourage you to tune in to Tell Me Your Story every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and also go to richarddugan.com. Until next week, my love to Lal, and we look forward to having you on the program next Saturday at 3 p.m.